Hello and welcome. This is the Nicholas Tatale Show, and I am your host, Nicholas Tatale. Today's guest is Rob Rast, who just hit 100,000 followers on Instagram. He's the co-founder of FLX Bike, has crowdfunded $1.3 million in 24 hours for his latest e-bike, the Baby Maker. He moved to China to start a business and ended up becoming a reality TV star. He's got a no-fear mentality and adventure for life. Before we dive into the episode, head on down to nicholasnatale.com/shop for sweatshirts, stickers, pins. Use discount code THENNSHOW20 for 20% off. Leave a 5-star review and you could be the reviewer of the week. We're trying to get to 100 5-star reviews faster than I can say Kentucky. This episode is sponsored by Little Webby LLC at littlewebby.com. They create the best darn custom software, websites, and mobile applications. Fill out their contact form at littlewebby.com and say we sent you for a free 30-minute consultation. This podcast was mixed and mastered by John Benny. His handles will be in the show notes below. Let's get to the episode.
So what that is we're going to teach people how to steal bikes.
Oh, dope.
In broad daylight, in front of a crowd of people.
Nice. Well, because you know, as soon as Corona's back, it's going to be only crowds.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so if you want to steal a bike, we'll show you how.
check out the tube. All right. Whew, I'm going to hit him with an intro. Hello and welcome. This is the Nicholas Natale Show. I am your host, Nicholas Natale. We have the most special guest of all time, Rob Rast.
What's going on? And thank you for the intro. I could take that special many ways, so I appreciate it anyways. And I have heard that too in many different forms, so thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. We're going to start off... Here we go. I'm going to start off a little teaser. First of all, Rob, adventurous guy. You live life, love life. Most recent endeavor is crowdfunding 1.3 milli in 24 hours. But we're not going to talk about that quite yet. That's just going to be a little taste in their mouth that they'll want to savor toward the end. We're going to start with 21-year-old Rob, 2010. You're living in China. You start your first company. Tell me if this is the correct name. California Rast Trading. Boom.
That's it. He's done his research. California Rast Trading Company. That was my very first company. Epic failure. It's so bad. What do you know about it? Have you looked into that at all?
Okay. So here's what I know. I know you were importing California wine into China. That was the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
What was going through your head, and what was the big failure? What happened?
All right, so since being a kid, it was always a lifelong goal of mine to run my own business, start my own company. That was bucket list, high up there, top three on my bucket list.
Nice.
Own my own company, because I was always entrepreneurial and loved kind of creating things.
Yeah.
Now, I had moved to China in 2009, dropped out of college.
Yeah. You don't need that. Forget that.
Yeah, who needs that?
Yeah.
I had a mentor who was always telling me, hey, if you want to be successful, you got to go to China and learn Mandarin Chinese.
Oh, wow.
It's my mentor who kind of swayed me to leave college and go to China. And I was there about a year and a half, and I met this guy who, he was a businessman in China. Started chatting with him, and I'm like, great, new mentor in China.
Yeah, beautiful. This can't beat that.
I didn't know it at the time, but he turned out to be just a total huckster.
A huckster?
Total huckster. You know, he would say all this. He's wearing fake watches.
Oh, no.
Just pretending to be way more successful than he was. And actually know what he's doing in business. But he was just borrowing money and just awful. But he had started this liquor company where he was selling Chinese baijiu, which is rice liquor. It's awful. Tastes like gasoline and bleach mixed together.
Oh, my gosh.
Just the worst. But he's making it for like $2 and selling it for $60 a bottle.
Oh, shoot. That's a good profit margin.
Right? 33,000% profit margin. You can't complain about that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, if this guy is doing that with this crap, how about some quality California wine?
That's a good thought. I mean, it
really
is. Light
bulb went off right there. Yeah, and it's a huge drinking culture over there in Asia. So I started making some calls and figuring out how I can start my wine company in China.
Nice. So there you are. You're learning Mandarin along the way, which is pretty dope. But then I don't even understand how you fulfill this
this dream. First of all, like, you moved to China, and then now you're finding, is it manufacturers back here in California now? And now you're taking that to China. Where is the failure? Where did it go wrong?
It went wrong at the very genesis of that idea. I mean, it's a successful idea is all about the execution, and I had no idea how to execute, for one, but for zero, to precede that, I wasn't passionate about wine at all. I didn't give a shit about wine.
Yeah,
I don't even like drinking. Like, I was doing it back then,
yeah,
but not a terrible amount, and I didn't enjoy it either. So
yeah.
If I had been passionate about wine, I would have been able to figure out how to make it work. Instead, I was just spinning my wheels the whole time. And to go from zero to having that company, you know, just got to start somewhere. So I just started throwing that idea out there, asking if anybody knew how I could get in with wine people. I found a guy who's inside Napa to supply the wine.
Wow.
And then just going around China, government building to government building, trying to register this business.
Yeah.
Took about...
Which I imagine is a process.
Oh, my God, yeah. I did about 9 months of my life working full-time to register a business.
Oh, my gosh. Just to register it.
With an agent helping me. Like, I was paying this agent to do it for me, but I was still doing all the work.
Oh, my gosh.
And at the end of 9 months, she's like, you know what? I fucked up. Like, you can't register this business because you're a foreigner.
Oh.
I was so mad. So then I decided, how can we make this even worse?
Yeah. You know what? Let's just go all the way.
Totally. Totally. So, you know, what's worse than not being able to register in your own name? How about instead of my name, how about registering it under my Chinese girlfriend's name?
Oh my gosh, bro. Are you kidding me?
Okay. So to say I've learned a lesson or two in the school of hard knocks is quite the understatement.
Oh, geez. So she took your wine and ran, or it just collapsed then in that moment?
No.
It's not. I understand the thought process, though. You're trying to register it. And it, you
right?
Know?
I'm like, well, I need a Chinese person to register this. Who's the Chinese person that I trust the most? The one that I'm sleeping with.
Yeah, great. There you go.
Why not?
Yeah.
And literally from the second she signed the paperwork to do that.
Things changed?
Everything changed because she knew I was stuck. She knew she could do whatever she wanted.
Yeah. Oh.
And that relationship would still be there. I wasn't going. So she started acting out. She'd, you know, go out at night, not return home. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, jeez.
So yeah.
Oh, jeez, that's rough.
Yeah, it was real rough. So learned a lot about myself, business, and relationships all in one there.
How'd you escape? What was your escape route?
You got to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
The whole thing is gone.
Everything, yeah, poof, gone.
Yikes. But then you lived there for some time, I believe, yeah? And you had a beautiful, this has got to be one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my whole life. You were on multiple or the same Chinese game show, and you killed it. Like, the way they edit it makes you seem like you are impossible to beat. First of all, how do you get on a Chinese game show?
Oh, yeah. So fast forward a bit. This is, you know, another company down, FLX. We started that bike company. And that was super successful on Indiegogo, our first run in 2016.
Nice.
I was doing a speech with Indiegogo at the telecommunications conference in Beijing.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I'm walking down the aisle and this sweet little Chinese girl comes up. In English, too. She's like, excuse me, like, we're making a TV show. I'm like, sign me up. Let's go. She's like, oh, it's like a reality TV show. I'm like, I'm in. Let's go.
I'm there.
Like,
come on.
Put my name in. She's like, it's okay. It's four beautiful girls and four guys. I'm like, did you hear me? Sign me
I'm
up.
I'm already in.
Yeah. So there's this mansion. It's called Beauty and the Geek.
Nice.
And there's one geek in every episode to, like, make it interesting. But
yeah.
You just kind of live together, and the goal is to find a partner to fall in love with and leave together, or you get voted out.
Oh, shoot. What happened to you? Oh, don't say it.
I crashed and burned a little bit. I took the bros before hoes thing a little bit too far.
Serious.
Yeah. So I tried to protect a buddy that I made on the show so that we could all kind of last another episode.
Nice.
You know, that went horribly wrong. It went down in flames.
Why did he backstab you?
To this day, I'm unsure about that.
Ooh.
So here's what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the tea. Episode one, you know, we're all in this house. I get paired with this girl, and then we're cooking dinner, And this beautiful girl comes out. This is like when you first meet all the girls. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the one. She's yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
And we start hitting it off, whatever. And I also make friends with this dude on that episode. And we kind of all realized that we're there for self-promotion. Like I wanted to promote my nutrition yeah, company at yeah, the time. They wanted to promote their acting, modeling careers. And in the second episode, my buddy, he had been paired with this girl. And the directors were like, you're going to have to leave with her on this episode. You guys have been so close that you have to take her on this episode. You guys are gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they're like basically forcing them out to tell the good love story.
Yeah.
And so I do this obstacle course and just crush it, just yeah, win by a landslide. So I get my pick of any girl.
Nice.
Now I meet with this dude who's like my best buddy on the show. And he's like, well, if you choose my girl, then it's against the rules. I can't leave with her. They won't force you out for your girl. And we can all last to the next episode. I'm yeah, like, you know what?
Some serious finessing.
That's actually a great idea.
Like, yeah.
All right, I'll do it, but you got to tell my girl what's up.
Yeah.
And so this is like a split second decision. So I go and I do that, stand behind his girl, and then everything erupts. It just went crazy. Oh, people no, were like, what? Why'd yeah, you choose her? You yeah, haven't talked to her this whole time. He didn't tell my girl. I don't know if that was purposeful or because there's cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to also be caught like manipulating the system.
Yeah.
And then, it just went downhill. And then I got unanimously voted out on that
episode.
Oh
my gosh.
So my girl turned everybody against me.
Dang.
It was funny. But we're still friends now.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad she forgave you.
I became known as the terrible Rob in China for
a
while. Oh,
no.
I'd be in a city like from California to New York, that kind of distance. And like somebody would come up on the subway like, oh, terrible Rob.
No way.
It was hilarious.
When you go back now, do you get it every now and then?
Very rarely, but I still do get it. That was in 2016, I think, about 4 years ago.
Dude, that is hilarious.
It was great. I wish I could do it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure you can get another chance at it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they'll bring you back.
Hell yeah. That did lead to a bunch of other shows, though, at least.
Really? What yeah, else? What was the... Dude, you had a dog chase you and maul you in the arm? Was that a different that show or the same show?
That was the first episode of the same show.
Okay.
Yeah, so the slowest one, I guess the fastest one, picks their girl.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was the other shows that you got to be on?
One was called Battle of the Bodies. It was a fitness show. So there'd be eight celebrity trainers. And then celebrities would come in and they pick like a side. They pick their trainers. And yeah, you have to do these like challenges like mountain climbing or just sumo wrestling, boxing, things like that.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. There's some other ones too. I forget the names of them.
And how did you just stop? Because if you had a trail of us like shows back to back to back, was part of you thinking like you were going to go the actor reality TV route? Because that's a business in itself, you know?
Oh, totally, totally. I loved it. And the reason I stopped actually is because I came out to San Diego. So my business partner and I, we switched places in 2018. Yeah. I came out here to run kind of our San Diego business and kind of left the whole
Hollywood, left China disparity.
The Chinese Hollywood aspect behind. But I think I'll do some shows out here soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
What's top on the list?
I don't know. I'll either get in a show or I'll make my own show.
Oh, shoot. You yeah, are kind of making your own show. Electric right, Love, baby.
There you go. Electric yeah, Love, right?
That's cool. How's that? How do you think that compares to being in one of those, like, I guess what would be the correct term, where like the production is 40 people crew or whatever, and now you're taking the whole show in-house while you're also running your business, you know?
Oh, it's tough. So Electric Love was an idea we started last year just to show people what goes on behind the scenes here and get like an uncensored look
yeah,
at the company, try and start like a little reality show. But it was our first try at it, and I was literally filming it on a GoPro with no microphone, yeah, nothing. So yeah, it was awful. It was yeah, terrible. It was a great, great learning experience. The yeah, actual viewing experience was probably so bad, though. Like, there were some really cool clips, but a lot of just boring droning in yeah, the office. You got to figure out how to capture that drama.
But also capture, like, I think you were chasing the aspect of, like, we're showing you this really fun side of our boards and our bikes, but mm-hmm, we're putting a ton of hard work into this.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you capture this hard work in a way that's still compelling? Because a lot of times you're at your desk grinding, you know? Like,
yeah. lately, that's 99% of the day just sitting at the desk. And that's, you know, who wants to watch that? Just sitting down at the desk. So we will probably bring that back. It may or may not be called Electric Love, but this time we know we got a much better idea how to tell a compelling story and how to show people the interesting part and kind of leave the boring parts out.
Yeah. Are you the one editing all of these?
Hell no.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm like, dude, that's a lot. Like, you're producing a lot of content.
Yeah. I wish. I love editing. I love creating videos. I love pretty much every aspect of what we do. I wish I could do it, but I'm just one man.
It's too much. Yeah, so. You can't do everything.
We've built a fantastic team here. We've got, you know, people to do the videography, the photography, the graphic design, the editing.
Yeah.
And I've got one guy that I use mainly for my stuff, my vlogs. I just put it on a drive, give him a quick prompt. It used to be like days and days back and forth, seven edits. And now it's like the last video he did, same day, 3 hours later.
Oh, beautiful.
First take, no revisions at all. Just completely done. So we're grinding really well together.
Yeah. And it seems like that's been the key to you growing and scaling almost all of your businesses, the fail, learn, repeat method until you can lock it down.
Yes. I saw a great quote. It's from, I believe it was Kranak, at Kranak on Instagram today. Uh-huh. Quantity leads to quality.
Oh.
That's so well said, because the more you try something, the more you do it, you know, every time you do it, you realize, fuck, I could have done it better this way.
Yeah.
I could have made it less boring. I could have cut all this crap out. I could have maybe had an external microphone.
Yeah.
And each time you're learning something, getting way better.
Yeah. There was something that you wrote that I thought was inspiring on your gram. And it was like, if you are afraid to do these things because you suck at it, like, you're never going to push past that point of sucking at it. You know what I mean? Like, you're always going to suck at it if you're never like,
oh, totally.
Even trying to push past it.
Totally. I mean, a lot of people, for example, are afraid to get on camera and show themselves on camera. And for good reason. You know, the first time you're on camera, you don't know what to do. You don't know where to look. You don't know what to say. Yeah. You're mumbling and stuff. And I was exactly the same way. And lately, we've been running this Indiegogo project, right?
Yeah.
Every day, almost every day, I have to push out a video update to our subscribers, show them what's going on.
No balls.
And just for fun, I'll go back to our original one in 2016 and look at what kind of content we were putting out. Oh my God. Oh my God. It is
hard to watch, huh?
It's so hard to watch. Like, my voice, I was afraid to even let my true voice be out. I was quiet. I was nervous. And now, like, I'm a little bit better at it. It's just kind of just doing it over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit more confident in really communicating the real me through camera, video, audio, whatever.
Yeah. Man, sometimes I'll go back and I'll watch some of my stuff, and I don't even think my stuff is good yet.
Yeah.
You know, like, I still think I'm in the sucking phase.
Uh-huh.
But I'll watch it back and I like stop it 30 seconds in. I'm like, all right, I got enough lessons out of the first 30 seconds,
right?
I don't need to keep going.
Oh man. But it's so cool. Do you ever look back and you're like, damn, I've come a long way?
I have. Yeah. There is some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely some of like, and I think the coolest part of like looking back on some of the stuff I've created is like seeing the style of how my style of either editing or like thinking of things has evolved, because this is what I've heard, that when you're first starting something out, you're trying to, is it imitate?
Mm-hmm.
And then like you're imitating someone, and then as soon as you figure out how to imitate them, like you find your own way to like add onto it and make it your own kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen like that. Like, I can look back on videos I've made where it's been like, oh, I was taken from this YouTuber.
Yeah.
Like, that's clear.
Who's yours? Who was it? Casey Neistat? Everybody's Casey Neistat.
I think when I started out doing like comedy skits, it was this guy, Jimmy Tatro. Have you heard of him? He's the real Bros of Simi Valley guy.
Okay.
He used to do a bunch of comedy skits. And I think there is some Casey Neistat, not entirely in like, in like his style, but like definitely his drive. Like, I see that for sure.
Nice.
What about you? Where's your style come from?
That's tough.
Cause you've tried a lot of different styles, I feel
like. I tried a lot of different stuff. Back in the day, Casey Neistat, I think I discovered that kind of halfway through doing vlogs for our company, where we sold all these bikes, like 2,000 bikes.
Yeah.
We were running into production delays and people were asking us like, where's our bikes? What's going on?
Yeah.
And so we had to like show them what's going on. So instead of just typing something out, I'm like, look, we're working our fucking asses off here at the factory. Ran into an unfortunate problem, and we want to make the bike better for you. And I'm going to show you how. And being able to communicate through that that method, through video, was so powerful.
Because they could actually see it.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of discovered Casey Neistat a little bit through that and adopted a lot of like the quick cuts and like, you know, filming like the car door and stuff like that. And it really made it fast paced. So that was one big inspiration. And I loved how he just didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing.
At the time, I was just so impressed. Like, he'd sit and he'd pull a folding table in the middle of just, like, people walking by, like, hundreds of people walking by, and he's just talking to the camera and not giving a fuck. And I was so amazed by that.
Yeah.
It's kind of inspiring and empowering for any content creator, I think.
Yeah, I agree. That takes some cojones. I kind of want to touch on the Indiegogo thing because, first of all, it came from an idea, right, that you didn't want your market to solely be like upscale rich people for these boards. You wanted everybody to have it, make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. So you did a volume group buy. Is this, am I on track? And then
that is on track, yeah.
And then what was the problem? Because I think there's a huge learning lesson in there, and I want to know what it was, you know?
Yeah. So when we first started the company, FLX, it just came from an idea to make an electric bike that was cool and that you'd be proud to ride.
Yeah.
Because everything on the market at the time just had like all these wires everywhere. It's ugly, poor performance, and expensive.
And bulky.
Like a nice one would be like $6,000. So
you gotta love it.
Exactly. So my partner and I, we're coming up with our own designs and stuff and trying to figure out how to launch this. Like we can do it. And through that research, we actually came across a company that was wildly successful on Indiegogo before. And they had done like $6 million in a two-month campaign.
Yeah.
And so, as you mentioned earlier with your style, you know, you can imitate in the beginning. I love to see how other people have been successful. And I saw, okay, somebody's used this platform to launch a very successful bike. That's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this platform. And here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to find out how they advertised, and I'm going to take what they've started and build on that and make it better.
Yeah.
And that's how we launched. So that led to, that was like, that was quite about 9 months just building up to the launch of that. And then in 2 months, this is in 2016, we did raise $2 million.
Oh my gosh.
In 60 days. And it just, you know, our goal was like 50,000. I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
But we worked our asses off. Yeah. Spent every last penny in my bank account in the marketing.
Yeah.
And it paid off. And we had so many orders that we're like, okay, we were expecting to ship these in 2 or 3 months. It might be a little longer than that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just kind of had to learn as we went and do the best we could. And we did eventually deliver every single bike except for a couple in like Dubai or something where we couldn't ship them. But we refunded those and moved on.
Dang. That's crazy. That's insane that you pulled it all off.
Right?
Like imagining $50,000 and then getting $2 million is a huge difference.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But that's dope.
So that was very exciting. So we were able to launch the bike for under $1,000.
Dang.
Which was our goal. And it competed with bikes that were like 4 and 5K.
Yeah.
So we were super hyped on that. And that's one of the main contributors to the success. Having the best product at the best price is always the best marketing strategy.
Yeah. And actually bringing the value, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious though, I wanna take it back even one more step.
Sure.
I want to know, was this the, what is it, conception? Is that conceiving of the e-bike idea? Was it really on a bike trip with a former girlfriend getting stuck, having to go 500 miles or whatever around an island?
So that was one of the contributing factors to this. There were a few key defining moments that kind of led to this in my life, and Pete, my co-founder, I'm sure he's got his as well.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until we met and started hashing out that all of our past experience kind of put that on the table, and we're like, that's it.
Yeah.
Bike company.
Yeah.
So
what happened? What really happened on that trip?
All right, so
give me the lowdown.
I've always been into bikes, speed motorcycles my whole life.
Yeah.
And I just love being active, getting out. We were living in Hainan Island. This is the girlfriend who I registered my company.
Oh, under. Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh. So this is like mid, you know, relationship, just trying to make it work. And we got a big little place there in Hainan. It's like $400 a month for a 2 bedrooms penthouse, basically.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And so we had extra room. So I had it on couch surfing, and people would come through that city, stay at the place.
That's
and a
dope.
Bunch of Good bikers would come through. So bicyclists would come through on a trip they would do around the island. It's kind of like this big monumental trip for Chinese people around Hainan Island. It's about 500 miles.
Oh my gosh.
And my ex, she had expressed, she's like, hey, like that looks like fun. I'd love to do that. Yeah. These guys look like they're having fun. So for Valentine's Day, I think it was, I bought her a bike for her birthday.
Nice. What a guy.
It was a road bike. She couldn't use it. So I bought another bike. Yeah. So I bought a mountain bike. I was like, all right, you use this one. Yeah. I'll use the road bike. And like, let's go do this trip. And it's Chinese New Year. So you get like a week off of work, a week or two. And we had trained for this a little bit. When I say trained, I mean, I trained. And she did like 2 rides. And then rode
around the block once or twice.
Yeah, exactly. We packed up the bikes, like loaded mine up with all the gear, and hers was pretty free. And then we hit the roads. And I think we did, is a long way. It was 100 miles, 100 kilometers on the first day.
Dang.
Get to the beach, ride at sunset, pitch the tent, go to bed, and wake up the next morning. She turns to me. She's like, oh, I can't. She's like screaming. She's like, I can't move my legs. Oh, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, like, let's have a bite to eat. See if you're all right.
Yeah.
And carbo
load. Let's get back in it.
And she couldn't do it. She's like, I can't ride any longer.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, I can, like, we can go back or I can go on.
Yeah.
And so we grabbed the bikes, went to a bus stop, and I took the wheel off her bike, loaded on the bus. And I was like, all right, I'll see you at home.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I got this, babe. Don't even worry about it. I'll do it for us.
So I got her the bus home, and I couldn't go back. I wasn't doing it. I don't go back. So
Trained. You were, you know, when you train for something, your mindset is,
when you set out to do something, you finish it. I knew she was all right. She, you know, she'd get back home, and she did just fine, but I couldn't go back. Wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I did this bike trip by myself, and it sucked. It was miserable. The one nice day was like one day, I had a 1 day break in the south of the island where I had a beach day.
Oh, nice.
And then I was back on the bike and there were like typhoons.
Oh my gosh.
I had this huge rash developing on both legs. And I'm into fitness my whole life. I had been working so hard in the gym to build some muscle.
Yeah.
I'm a hard gainer. And on this 1 week trip, I had lost about 10 pounds of muscle.
It was
about like a year, 2 years of progress in the gym.
My
just
gosh.
Gone like that. I was literally cursing the wind. I was up against 20, 30 mile an hour typhoon winds. I swear I was going backwards at some point.
Oh my
gosh. It's like pouring rain, beating on me.
Just staying in place.
I was just like, oh, fuck. You know, to save time, because I was trying to get back to work too. Yeah. I was on the highway. It was so dumb. No helmet. Typhoon winds blowing me, getting rained on. And I pitched my tent. I couldn't make it to a highway exit before nightfall, and I wasn't going to ride at night and just become roadkill. So I just dragged my bike up this hill.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a little banana tree forest, and I pitched my tent in there, and then it starts pouring rain, and I'm, like, between banana trees, so it's just a big divot.
Little valley, yeah.
And it turns into a little swimming pool inside my tent, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever done.
Just laying there with their eyes open. What am I doing here? So, how did this happen to me?
Exactly. So I got back, like, the next day or two, and I was just puking my guts out from exhaustion when I got back, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm never, ever doing a long bicycle trip again. I love riding bikes, but there's a limit where you get to a point of diminishing returns. And for me, that's like 30 minutes, an hour. Like, this is fun. And after that, like, I'm losing body mass, I'm bored.
Yeah.
I want to go fast. I love to see places. I want to get there.
Yeah.
And so motorcycles became that until the light bulb went off with Pete. And we're like, we can do bikes faster.
Yeah.
We can have more fun on these things.
Yeah. So now you can go wherever. For however long, you know.
Exactly.
You're keeping the fun in biking.
Exactly.
That's what you're doing.
Making biking fun again for the folks who maybe don't appreciate those long, long, grueling distances.
Yeah, geez. That's That's a brutal way to come to fruition of what your next company is going to be.
Oh my God, it's rough.
Did you have, you had, and let me know if I'm wrong with this too. Was there two or one companies in between FLX Bike and the wine?
There was another company I started about the same time as the bike company, maybe okay. a couple weeks earlier. And I was, so after the wine company, I got introduced by my mentor again to the rest.
The shady guy or the guy from?
The good mentor.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, okay, okay.
Good mentor, American mentor, Scott yeah. Powell, just nice. An awesome dude. He runs some like airports up in Sacramento, sells yeah. the fuel to private jets. And he said, hey, my fuel supplier is trying to break into China. They're looking for a front guy to bring him in. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, like, I've been learning Chinese all this time. It's time to yeah. go. So I got this. It was a great job. And I was doing that about 2 years. And we were just banging our heads in China. Couldn't get past a bunch of government stuff. Oh. And I was kind of spinning my wheels. At the same time, because I was in fitness, I was having a lot of trouble finding protein in China.
Really?
It would be fake or it'd be $140 for like 5 pound container.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, who would buy that? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I was just slamming raw eggs every day and sugar. And I got salmonella once.
Did you?
No big deal. Oh, no. Yeah.
I always wanted to know if that would really happen. That's wild. Yeah, it does.
I'm pretty sure it was some sort of food poisoning that lasted yeah. quite a few days. And I got over that, kept doing the eggs until I found raw whey protein, the ingredient. I found a source for that and I started mixing that with like cocoa powder yeah. and sugar, trying to make it taste a little better. And then people in the gym started asking like, yo, what is that? Can I try it? It seems yeah. to work for you. Yeah, yeah. And the light bulb went off. I'm like, I'm not the only one with this problem.
Yeah,
I bet there's a load of other people who can't get a good protein for a good price. Yeah. And so I quit my job, broke up with my
the girl
then was another girlfriend at that time and
the company or the girl you can only have one at a time.
Yeah, I got a long history here going maverick jumping out the airplane, but it just completely freed me up to focus and start my nutrition company. I came up with these awesome formulas that were yeah. super clean, based them off protein that I liked in the States.
Yeah.
And then I took the shit out that I didn't like yeah. aspartame, ACE-K sweeteners, yeah. sweetened it with stevia.
Nice.
And launched that in China. And that was pretty cool. Like I didn't get to put a lot of time in it because I met Pete and we started mm-hmm. the bike company soon after. But it was really cool to have a product that I believed in and share that with the world.
Yeah. So you just find a solution to a problem and then you just go for it. What's your go for it strategy then? What would you say?
Something. It's always start somewhere. Just, you never know what to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And you don't need to know what to do. You can do one thing. Just figure out what's one thing that I can get that will bring me closer to the goal of having this. So yeah. I knew with the nutrition company, well, for starters, I need to have a protein that tastes good.
Yeah.
So I just started working in the kitchen, just testing things out and
yeah.
seeing, does this taste good to me? And when it comes to product design, a lot of people do like focus groups and things like that and all sorts mm-hmm. of surveys. And you can spend 6 months, a year surveying the data. And I'm yeah. not saying that's a bad way.
Yeah.
But if you haven't got a huge budget for that and a lot of time to put into it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Why not just build it for yourself? And so I built the protein for me. I was like, yeah. I want a protein that tastes good and yeah. is good. And I designed it around exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that there were other people like me who also wanted a clean protein
yeah.
and also didn't want to pay $150
oh, yeah.
a bottle for
yeah.
it. And we did the same thing with the bikes. We're like, what would be the sickest electric bike we can make?
Yeah.
It's going to be fast. It's going to be sexy. People are going to look at it and be like, damn, I want that.
Yeah.
And we built that for us. And we're lucky that, you know, 2,000 people around the world also loved that and bought yeah. one when we launched.
Yeah. Which is beautiful.
So that was our launch strategy. Just do something, build it for you. If you haven't got better data than that,
yeah.
who's a better target audience than yourself and people like you?
Did you have any hesitation quitting your job to jump into either of those companies? Because from what I read, one of them was a high-paying aviation job.
That's correct.
Which I think that would be tempting
mm-hmm.
if you have something that's high paying already,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you like aviation and flying and the adrenaline.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that was. I mean, it was a sweet gig. I was like 23 years old at the time, making over 100K a year, just laughing. I was having yeah. a good time.
Yeah.
I was making some money and I was doing a great job for my company too. And we got to China with them, and it just was not fulfilling anymore. It was being kind of micromanaged, and the things we were doing were very low, low value tasks, and I just couldn't see it anymore, and I wasn't passionate about it either. Yeah. And at that time, they had asked me. They said, "Hey, we need you to come back to America." It was always a kind of a back and forth with them.
Yeah.
They loved having me in America because I was great at it.
Yeah.
But I didn't spend 5 years in China to work at an American tech company, and so it was super easy for me. I'm like, "All right, guys, like, it's I love time. You, but now it's time to hop out of this jet.
Yeah.
Hit the parachute and." Wherever I land, I'm going to figure it out and do something new.
Yeah.
And I love those moments. They're so, so freeing. You got an open book to figure out what's next.
Yeah. Dang, that's awesome. Was it how has it been since you are a maverick kind of guy of, I'm just going to do this solo. I'm going to get this down, whatever it takes. I'm going to figure it out. How's it been having a co-founder? Has it been relieving? Has it been communication? You got to learn that part of it, or
it's interesting. It's almost like a marriage. It's so
gotta be on the same page.
So interesting. And both Pete and I have been our whole lives, you know, that kind of maverick style.
Yeah,
we've got an interesting situation where, you know, typically a business, you've got like a visionary and somebody who's more
technical.
Yeah, technical or details oriented, and we're both. Visionaries and both, you know, maybe don't have the best keen eye for details like,
yeah,
you know, all the HR stuff and things like that. And so when we met, we're like, oh damn, like we're a powerful force here. We're both like, when we do something, we go and get it done.
Yeah.
So we started doing that. But since then it's been great. We'll play off each other. He'll find faults in my work and the other way around. And what we produce together is much stronger than what we could have produced solo.
Yeah.
So that's been great. It does slow down the process because, you know, I'm slowing down his work by saying, hey, you know,
what about that?
Yeah. What if we tried it this way? And he's doing the same thing to me. But at the end of the day, we come up with much better ideas and have a much better product.
Yeah, the quality's much better.
Yeah.
What's the saying? You can go far by yourself, but you can go further together. Something like that.
Yeah, totally true.
Yeah, I think so.
One amazing thing about working with Pete is so passionate. And so at the launch of the company, you know, I had done my wine business and then I did the protein business and I was, you know, putting everything I could into that. Then he came on to do the bikes together and he was there. He was doing like 16, 18-hour days only on the bikes.
Oh, man.
And so I'm like, fuck, we're 50-50 partners.
Yeah,
If I don't match this, this is going to be really, really shitty on my part. So I had to match his effort.
Dang.
And the combined effort of us both working 120-hour weeks nonstop, that's what really led to the results in the first campaign. You put in the work, you get it done.
Yeah, you're bound to get something when you guys are both. That's awesome, though, that you guys both are rising to each other's whatever capacity, because I feel like there's the opposite of, you could also lower to each other's capacity. So finding a co-founder that's going to shoot for the same is pretty, I don't want to say lucky, but it's pretty blessing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe because we're both competitive, you know, Pete was like a boxer for a while too. We were both into fitness and maybe we were competing to, you know, see who could grind harder.
Yeah.
That really helped.
How much has having your feet wet in China helped with FLX bike?
Tremendously. We would not be here at all probably if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
From the start, so our first step there was from the genesis of this idea, we're like, well, maybe there's a bike already being made here or developed by a Chinese factory that we can just bring to the West.
Yeah.
And so we just went around China, factory to factory, contacting factories, and you know, all of our negotiations and everything is in Chinese, and we're letting
them know. Yeah, and you speak it. Thank goodness. I was going to say.
So we'd go to the factories, and Pete would do the English guy, and I would bust out the Chinese halfway through, and being able to build those relationships and kind of understand the culture with them, that was huge. But we eventually found a company that was willing to build our prototypes with us in a very low volume cost. Effective way where we could do the design and they would build it for us. And that was huge. Without that, we would never have FLX bikes.
How did you, so I'm interested, I've been like dabbling in the worlds of dropshipping and e-commerce. Okay. Like I'm so fascinated by it. I've just been studying around the clock of how the best ones do it. But one of the things that seems to be a key problem for almost all of them is how the heck in the world do you find a good manufacturer? Because if you go on Alibaba or AliExpress, they have ratings, you know, like this is a 4.5 manufacturer. I don't know if that's true, you know, unless I go over there and check them out, but I can't go over and check out 100 manufacturers before I'm like, okay, yeah, let's go with this one to make my dog penless or whatever the product is.
Yeah, totally. That's a good point. So whenever you have a system like that, that people sort to get a ranking, people are going to find ways to manipulate it. So you see Amazon is filled with fake ratings.
Yeah.
Alibaba, same thing. Chinese, Amazon equivalent, same exact thing. So you just don't know who to trust. What we do is we'll go to the actual factory. And the biggest thing you'll see is, especially on Alibaba, is people pretending to be companies. The 90% of the ones there, they don't actually manufacture it. They're a trading company that has contacted 100 factories making 100 different things.
Yeah.
And they'll say, hey, we make this thing. And then they're marking it up, you know, and they're 30-50% to you. So you're not getting the best price. If you want any changes, they're going to have to call the factory.
Yeah.
It's just awful. So
biggest
thing is avoiding the trading company, making sure, you know, you can find out the name of the actual factory. They do have business licenses for factories in China.
That's good.
Get that and find out. Make sure the name of their company is the actual factory. Maybe do some video chats with them at the factory. Yeah. You can't actually physically be there.
Yeah, yeah.
But physically being there is the best way.
Is that how you found yours? Did you pull off of contacts you already knew, or?
I think we went on Alibaba.
No,
Chinese
really?
Alibaba, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we're just looking electric bike, and then we'd see, okay, there's this factory in Shanghai, this one in Wuxi, this one in Shenzhen. Yeah. And we just did a list, hopped on the trains, and we just went for it.
Oh,
factory
shoot.
To factory. We talked to people and found out, like, these guys make cool bikes, but they're assholes. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
Trying to work with people I actually like.
Yeah, exactly.
And you found somebody that makes quality stuff. And that's the other thing that I think is, there's so many layers to finding the right manufacturer for your whatever type of product that you're selling, is because one, they have to like make your stuff and be trustworthy in communication, because they could just pull the plug on you, you know?
Yeah.
But then two, like their materials aren't any good.
Oh yeah.
You're screwed.
It's so important to set standards, and you know, there's standards for everything. If what kind of product have you looked into dropshipping? Let's use that as an example. Give me one product.
I've been looking into quite a bit of stuff. I've been looking more into niches than I have products themselves.
Okay.
So I think the realm of dogs fascinates me.
Okay.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, I don't know if entirely the passion is there, but like the fact that there's some emotional pull when people are purchasing things, like, you know, whatever that dog pendant is.
Yeah.
Like people are gonna be like, oh, that's nice.
Uh-huh.
So like a $15 to $20 necklace for their dog or something, or for themselves. That would be one. Another one, I think right now health is big.
Yeah.
In regards to like home workout.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the bands would be a good investment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're trying to build longevity, I don't want to hop on the trend just because quarantine's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Beautiful. So biggest thing there is to establish measurable standards and enforce them right from the start. So if you're going to do a band, then you need to know everything about bands. You need to know what standards are used to measure the type of material they're using. So is it a latex band? What's the thickness, the width, and the elasticity? I'm talking out of my ass right now, but I'm sure there's a measurement for a coefficient of elasticity for that band, and a tool that you can use to measure it.
Yeah.
And so when you get your shipment, you're going to tell these guys, first of all, I'm going to measure these against the spec that we've agreed on. And if it's out of this spec, I'm going to return them for a full refund.
Yeah.
So you need to establish that and enforce it like a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make them sign something? Say, hey, this is how it's going to be.
Totally. That's got to be in your contract. You know, with our guys, we've got a multi-point checklist. We've got like 100 point checklist
Balls.
On the bikes of exactly how it needs to be. It needs to shift through the gears, This way, it needs to hit this top speed, a neutral throttle run.
Yeah.
It's got to do this. It can't have any blemishes above a certain size.
Yeah.
But very, very specific about what you expect. And if it doesn't fulfill that, they'll build a whole bike. So we've probably rejected, I personally rejected probably over 500 bikes at the factory and told them, this thing's completely built. You need to do it again because you let it through with a tiny scratch on the frame.
Yeah.
Now you've got to do the whole thing over again.
Yeah, because you can't sell a bike with a scratch on it.
And that's painful to them. That's a lot of labor. So they learn, fuck, we're not pulling anything over on these guys. And that's just me. Pete goes even harder on them. Like
really?
10 times harder than I do.
Yeah. So
he's great on that front.
Is Pete over there in China right now?
Pete's actually headed to Europe right now, looking at starting up our European operations there.
Holy crap, you guys are going to Europe?
We are going to Europe. Yeah. So we sold a bunch there for our baby maker launch, and it might be a great foray for our way into Europe, but we'll keep those plans under wrap a bit for now.
Got it. All right, so let's hit the $1.3 million in 24 hours crowdfunding, because I think that... Like that headline, 1.3 million in 24 hours. I read that and I'm like, holy crap, how much work did they do before those 24 hours? You know what I mean? Like right. It's cool to say that one headline, but I'm like, oh my gosh, there's got to be so much behind that.
Mm-hmm.
What were you guys doing? How did you pull that off?
So there was a lot of work that did go behind that. And I wish I could say that work all took place within a 24-hour span, but that's not the case at all. That was the entire team busting their ass from product design, and that was about a two-year process to get to where we are today, just to design that product. And then kind of my operation here, what I do is make sure that we can distribute it and spread the word about it. Because you can have the best product in the world. If nobody knows about it, it's a failure.
You got nothing, yeah.
So I had been doing a lot of like van trips to get people on it, to build up media, directing the team to get our videos together. And we did a lot of online advertising to tell people, hey, we have this bike coming. We don't know exactly when it's going to launch, but we are going to launch it. And if you sign up, we're going to give you the sickest sweetheart discount you could imagine when we launch. And so we worked for quite some time to build up a list of very interested people. And we knew if we had enough people and enough volume, we could get the price down to a point where we could just make it so attractive for these guys, it would be stupid
not to buy it,
not to order one.
Yeah.
So we got the price under $1,000 for our launch day, which is pretty
that's amazing,
sick.
Yeah.
For you'd pay more than that for a normal bicycle at a bike shop.
Yeah. That's dope. That's so incredible.
Long story short, all that came to fruition on launch day. We pressed the button. 2 minutes later, we had crushed the goal of 20,000. And I think within 15 minutes, we had 400,000, and then it just kept climbing from there. And we hit the million within 11 hours, which is just amazing for us. I think it might be a crowdfunding record for Indiegogo. Yeah. Definitely for electric bikes, the fastest one to a million, which is pretty cool.
That's insane. That guy, NWC Digital, is that somebody you use for marketing? The guy, whoever that guy is in the video that works for NWC Digital, was so confident. You guys are going to hit a million.
Hell
you're like, do you think it's going to hit a million? He's like, oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah. No doubt in my mind. But something that was really cool about that video was when you guys hit a million, everybody was stoked, like the whole company. And I think that comes from building a culture, like where everybody's happy that this... you know what I mean? Where it's not like, oh, that's cool, the company did it. But.
Totally. Well, I mean, it's kind of like you watch a movie and the hero, if you think of our company as the main subject of the video, the hero just gets beat down just over and over again, gets hit by these obstacles, gets knocked down, and finally at the end, he triumphs and wins.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like for our company. You know, we had big challenges. We had production delays where I think we went 9 months one time with no bikes at all. And we were doing fighting to keep our employees employed, keep them working on stuff despite not having bikes, but keep people with jobs. And we lost a shit ton of money. We were bleeding money for about 9 months straight.
Oh my gosh.
Just went just gangbusters on blowing through money. And for that to culminate eventually in that raise in that amount of time, the team was so stoked.
Yeah.
Because we needed a big win, and everybody worked their asses off and kind of saw, wow, when we all come together and focus on something and give it our all, we can do big, big things together.
Yeah, heck yeah. How do you stay collected when you're bleeding money like that? How do you stay
Oh man, it's tough. I've you know, living in China, you get hit with a lot of things. From the very start, you arrive and you've got no Facebook, no Instagram.
Oh yeah.
Everything's nothing. A challenge. You know, yeah. It's hard to order food. It's all in a different language.
Yeah.
You just get hit nonstop, one thing after another. Oh, guess what? Your visa's expired. And and it's gonna take you 6 months of your life to apply for a new one.
Yeah.
Like full time work. And you just get hit with one thing after another. And kind of after that, and you know, a lot of things in my life, there's just nothing that can faze me anymore. You know, shit happens. That's life.
Yeah.
You know, nobody said life is going to be easy, that there's not going to be any challenges. You get hit with something, and it's not about what happens. It's about what you decide to do with that and what you choose to do in reaction to that. And, you know, being stressed out about it isn't going to solve any problems.
That's for sure. Do you take out emotion when you're making decisions? Do you try to? How? Where do you toe the lines on having emotions be in play in decisions, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I'm pretty emotionless when it comes to making decisions. I'm about 60% of the way there. And I get a lot of shit for that as well.
You know,
for not showing my emotions or communicating my true like feelings a lot. But I just look at something and analytically think, you know, what's our best option here?
Yeah.
Let's do that. And there is still sometimes where pride gets involved and that can cloud your decision making, or maybe your relationship with an employee that, you know, isn't really pulling their weight in the company, but you're close. And that can,
how do you have that
can drag on an employment situation for longer than it needs to be. So that is both a strength and a weakness. Not having the emotions is a strength, but having those, you know, it's a strength to be able to connect with people. It's a weakness, though, to
let it dictate how you do things.
Not
almost.
Make timely business decisions that need to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds tough. That sounds
like, but, you know, we've made it through all that, and the whole team right now is so strong.
Oh,
I couldn't be more excited about the team we've gathered now. It's taken us a while. We've had some shitheads come and go, and we've had some really amazing people, too, and we're stoked about the team we got now.
Can't beat it. I'm curious about, oh man, I'm gonna go for it. Yeah. I'm curious about where your motivation and your drive stems from. And I want to know, I'm curious if some of it comes from your dad, because I read the two stories about, which I think is fantastic. Your dad cut up a fake $50 bill and then gave you a piece of the fake 50 for 50 days while you worked out until you got a 50. And then he also tried to build a plane in your garage. Mm-hmm. Like those are, I don't know. Both of those seem like very, I'm instilling this you can do anything mantra in you. Where are you pulling it from? And did your dad have play in that?
So my dad has a huge, huge role in that since being a kid. You know, my dad's a big engineer and way more talented than I am when it comes to building things and putting things together. It's just amazing the things he'll come up with. And since being just tiny, he'd be working on something in the garage and say, "Hey, Rob, hey, Ronnie, come out and help me figure out how to make a lock on this ladder."
Yeah.
And he would let us tinker with it and come up with ideas. Like, he knew how to do it. He could have it done in 5 minutes, but he'd let us spend hours trying to come up with a solution.
Yeah.
And he'd go with the shittier solution that he came up with just to let us tinker with something and show us, like, hey, you can build something.
Yeah.
And now let's see how it performs.
Yeah.
And maybe we can learn something from that. And so he kind of always encouraged that creativity and curiosity as well. I remember one time I got in trouble in school because there's the lamination on the edge of the table.
Yeah.
And I had figured out you could get like the sharp side of a pen into there. And I was just like digging it up, trying to like see what the table was made out of.
Yeah.
And I got like the worst red card or something you could get at school for breaking their equipment. And my dad was like, "Well, he's just curious. He's trying to find out what was in there.
Yeah, what's really going on with this thing?"
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was stupid what I did, but like, he understood. He's been there. So yeah, he instilled that a lot in me. And I think he had a big ego growing up. Like, well, I always wanted to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he gave me a lot of that.
Yeah.
I was, you know, genetically, I'm short. I got a small dick, so maybe I got to work harder than the rest of the people out there. Maybe that's maybe that's been a little chip on my shoulder to make me work even harder to provide value and get that recognition that I think everybody wants to get in life.
Yeah. But it's twofold. Because I think there's the other side of you that is constantly trying to provide value to make, you know, the community or the world or whatever, whoever your product is impacting. I do believe that you are trying to make it better, like have people's lives be more efficient and better because of who you are. So do you think some of it is also you are striving to be better versions of yourself so you can be better for other people?
100,000,000%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my whole life, you know, maybe that's for my dad too, the classic engineer, you know, trying to figure out how to do things better.
Yeah.
And from an engineering standpoint, you know, every little thing at home, they were showing us, you know, how can you do this better? Yeah. When it came to using the sponge or washing your dishes, you know, we get in trouble. Like, you know, there's a better way to do this where you don't waste as much soap or where the countertops show.
That sounds like such an engineer.
Cleaner. Oh, exactly. I've got crazy OCD now when my employees like leave a wet countertop or leave the wet sponge in the bottom of the sink to get all full of germs. I'll freak out. I'll flip out a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just thinking, how can I use the same energy and get a better result?
Yeah.
So my whole life I've dedicated to trying to become a better me, trying to figure out how to be smarter, faster, stronger. In everywhere, I read a lot of self-help books, a lot of books about marketing, basically anything I want to achieve. Just read about it and learn, how can I do this better?
Yeah.
And by bettering yourself, by being your best self, I think you can contribute more and you'll also get a lot more in return. Like, I'm not going to lie, I'm not the most selfless person. Yeah. I do it for me. Like, I want to be the best. I want to have the best life. And I don't think you can do that without providing a lot of value for the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, even from what I've just like learned through doing this podcast is like people are so three-dimensional and you really cannot like almost fully encapsulate who someone is in just a matter of words, because I do, like the way I see you act is you're helping other people by serving with them and collaborating with them, but you're also grinding on working on yourself to make yourself better. And because you're working on yourself, it makes other people better. It's like such a weird, like, continuous cycle that it's almost hard to, I'm not going to say explain, but you know what I mean? Like, hold on to in a way where you can analytically say, okay, if I spend an hour on myself a day, that's going to mean 3 hours go to other people. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Totally. So it's key here. Try and do this without math, getting math involved for the nerds. Yeah. It's kind of like calculus. Everything is a function of time.
Okay.
And if we look at ourselves, we have a very finite life. You just have a set number of years to live based on a number of factors, but you're definitely not going to live forever. And so for me, I'm not going to be happy unless I'm better today than I was yesterday, better tomorrow than I was today. And when I get into like relationships and stuff like that, there's a big feeling of, for me, I can get resentment if I'm not with the right partner who's encouraging me to continue doing that.
Yeah.
Because my mission is to be better and to do things better and to give more and also to get more out of life. But if I'm sitting there fucking watching Netflix all day,
that's hard.
Eating Twinkies or whatever, and I'm losing my gains, I haven't contributed anything to society, I'm going to feel like shit, unfortunately. And maybe that's a blessing, maybe it's a curse. I think it's a little bit of both. But I want to do more than I did yesterday every single day of my life.
Yeah. You know, I'm in the same boat, and I haven't fully figured it out. I'm just going to word it like that. Because I think there is part of me that is fully achiever mode where I can't sit still. Like, I think you and I are probably similar of like, you wake up and you think about work and what you have to do, and then you do it, and then you do that all day, and then you go to sleep, and then you wake up and you're like, oh, what else do I have to do?
Right.
Gotta do? Like, it's almost like this obsessive sense of like, I have these things that I want to do and things that I want to live, you know, live out, and I'm capable of doing them. So why doesn't every minute go into that?
Yeah.
You know, because I want to live like that, and I'm going to work at that. And I don't know where, that's fine. I don't know entirely where the point of health is in that. I really don't. I haven't found it yet. Mm-hmm. Where do you think it is for you? Because I think the relationship thing is so true. And that's so important to have someone that encourages you. But there's also give and take in those. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, ugh.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That's something I'm still figuring out myself. You know, it's not a day goes by where I don't ask myself, what is my purpose? Why mm-hmm. am I doing this? And trying to get a better pulse on who I am as a person and what my ultimate goal here is on this planet. Like what thing should I be doing to give the most?
Yeah.
Where I have the most potential to give back to this world.
Yeah.
And also, you know, get more out of life, be more fulfilled. And I'll be honest, sitting at a computer for 18 hours a day,
it's tough.
Is not it.
Yeah.
That's not how I'm gonna give to the world. That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
While I'm running this Indiegogo campaign. And I'm very happy to do it. It's got to be done.
Yeah.
And the more results we'll have now, the more resources I will have to do what I truly want to be doing and what I'm truly skilled and talented at in the future.
Yeah.
So a big part of this is a learning process and learning to, I guess, delegate and teach my team and hire more people to do the things that need to be done.
Yeah.
That I don't find as fulfilling as the things that I should be doing with my time or are most talented at.
Yeah.
And that actually comes probably more to like social things and meeting up with people.
Yeah.
Like us right now. I love doing this. We're chatting. Yeah. I wish I could learn more about you. I wish the podcast was more about you. But meeting up with people, making videos, riding bikes, riding skateboards.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want to be spending my time doing. That's why we're building these things because they're fucking awesome to ride. So I would like to spend more time doing that in the future.
Yeah.
Get all my work delegated out and go out and just share it with the world. Show people like you don't need to completely give up your car, you don't need to completely, you know, give up food to have great results, to lose a little weight or have a better body.
Yeah.
You don't need to give up your car to contribute a little bit to cleaner air for the entire world.
Yeah.
If everybody contributed a little, we'd be in a much greener place. And if we show them, hey, there's these cool fucking alternatives that are fun to ride and good for the planet, I think we can make a big impact.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, the whole time thing too is such an interesting thing because exactly what you're saying, I get in the same mindset of like even being stuck at like what you're saying, the desk in the current state is almost like this, okay, I'm going to be here and I'm going to work on this thing for 18 hours because tomorrow or the next day or the next day or a month or a year out, all my time will be freed up because I did the work right now. And that is, it's so interesting because we crave time for autonomy in our life, but we're sacrificing all of it right now.
Exactly.
So it's a double-edged sword of like, when do you...
Exactly. That's so hard. So I've got a question for you.
Okay, hit me.
All right. 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And this is an idea. I still don't know the answer to myself. I've been toying with this. Maybe you can help me out. 10 years from now, do you think you'll be making the same income, let's say hourly income as you are now, or more?
More.
More, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
You pretty confident in that?
I'm confident, yeah.
10 times more, 100 times more?
Ooh. I think there's a sweet spot for me. Yeah. I'm going to say probably around, I'm going to probably say around 10.
Okay, around 10 years from now, you'll be making about 10 times more than you are now.
Yeah.
At that point in your life, will you be hiring people or paying people to do certain things that you're doing yourself now?
100%.
100%.
Without a
doubt. Like what? Name one thing you would pay somebody to do for you.
Like you, I have a whole list. Editing would be great. Yeah. I think even researching like guests would be another thing.
Okay.
Anything monotonous. I shouldn't say that. Because I enjoy editing and I enjoy the research.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like the...
You've got limited bandwidth.
Yeah. Anything that's going to take up too much time.
Okay. So editing and guest reach out. All right, 10 years from now, you'd have the money to do that. Great. Now, would you say that your time here on Earth is finite?
Yes.
Yes?
100%, yeah.
And 10 years from now, your time will be worth so much that it would be stupid for you to do it yourself, right?
Correct.
So why are you doing it now? Because you're not going to get that time back.
I'm not, but I'm also not 10 times making 10 times more in the income.
Right, but you will be.
But I will be. And I think there's also another thing of if I don't do this work right now, I can't train somebody up on it to do it exactly the way I would think of doing it. Mm-hmm. Which I think there's an aspect of letting go, but there's also an aspect of if they're not doing it correctly and I don't know what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I'm going to be screwed. Right. I'm going to pay in somebody out of pocket that I'm got no idea.
Right.
But also, I think you're right. Like, I'm curious on the research side of things, for sure scheduling, but research side of like, so when I go through and I research somebody like you who has like all of these beautiful things to talk about and have lived, would they find the same key things that I would think is significant, you know?
Now, you've done the best research out of any podcast I've been on.
Oh, wow.
I'm really impressed with that.
I'll take that.
That would be hard to train somebody to do. I don't know if you got a system for that, but if you could teach somebody that, that would be amazing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because it takes time. It takes, and I...
How long did you research this? I'm curious.
I don't want to tell you.
Because you've turned over some old Instagram posts. I can tell.
This has probably been between 10 and 12 hours.
10 to 12 hours?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
And how do you keep notes of it?
I have two sections. One's called questions and the other one's called the meat. And the meat is everything that I find that I think is interesting to talk about.
That's cool. That's really cool.
But I've never shared that strategy before. So, man, how fun.
We got it out of it. We got out of the strategy.
Yeah.
Hope there's no competitors listening.
Yeah, seriously. So what are you going to say? Because the other thing is creativity. How do you train creativity? You got to hire someone with the right creativity.
Well, yeah. But people can also bring their own creativity to the table.
Which is true. And I think that's almost better than what I could bring. I think a lot of times having a team do something collectively on my behalf is going to be far better than what I could do.
Totally. So this is something I've been toying with, this idea. And if I had some more time if I could have 1 month just to chill on a beach and think, I think I would come up with a good answer to this. But the dilemma is that your time, you know your time's going to be worth more in the future.
Yeah.
And you're doing things now that in 10 years, it would be stupid for you to spend your time on them.
Right.
Because your time's worth way more than that.
Right.
So why not just pay people to do that now and achieve that goal instead of 10 years from now, 8 years from now? And be able to contribute more, do the things that you're actually good and talented at and love doing.
Yeah.
Focus your time on that. And the scapegoat here is you're going to say, oh, well, I can't afford to do that now. But you can get a credit card. You can get a loan. If you truly believe in yourself, would that not be the best investment you can make
in
your life?
That's true. Yeah, it's 100% true.
So I'm toying with that idea of going balls out, starting to pay people to do everything I don't like doing.
Yeah.
Starting to invest a lot more in myself, my own distribution channels, my own projects, and blow those up. Really go hardcore on the investment. Know that I'm not going to see a return for maybe a couple of years, but it will come.
Yeah. You've been in the situation where you've been bleeding money before, you know?
Yep.
And you turn it around. You have a good track record of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, it seems it would... Oh, dude. Because they say the best investment you can make is it's not in anything but yourself, you know?
Totally. I mean, because who's got control of your money if you put it into a stock?
That's true.
It's some other dickhead. And he doesn't have your interests at mind.
Yeah.
You've got your interests at mind.
That's a great point.
So if you're confident in your abilities and you've done a bit of learning about your craft and you know yourself, like, just go balls out on you.
Shoot, are you gonna do it? You got a game plan? Are you mapping out?
I'm pretty
the game
sure
plan?
I'm gonna do it. I'm still tweaking the details, but I'm gonna go for it. You'll be seeing some pretty cool things the next year too.
Okay.
You
know what?
You have a lot of question marks.
You know, you need to keep me up to date on this because I might have to do the same. I have a similar game plan going on that might come to fruition come August, but
okay.
You're pushing me to think that there's more to be done.
Hell yeah.
Yeah,
I gotta hear about that.
Yeah, that's dope. We have a few more questions.
All right, let's go.
A few more questions is, I like asking people about their friends because I think a lot of times who we choose to continuously hang out with is, you know, it becomes who we are. So you have a friend, Larry LaPointe, who seems like he has somewhat of an interesting story too. And this is all I know. Mm-hmm. Was in prison, went door-to-door sales, and now is some sort of successful investor.
Mm-hmm.
How did you meet him, and why are you guys friends?
Okay, so, oh man, this could bring up a lot of other topics too. We got a limited time. So Larry, I actually met on the on the boardwalk in Pacific Beach.
Oh, wow.
I was riding my electric skateboard.
Yeah.
And I think he had one out there. No, he didn't have a skateboard on him, but he's out there parked with his Ferrari. And I'm like, damn, like, this dude's got it going on. He's got the Ferrari.
Yeah.
And I was riding by on my skateboard, and they, like, said something about it. So I went over and started chatting with him.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I got a boosted board. And we started talking, and I showed him the board, got him on it. And I was like, yeah, I could, like, make one custom for you with the Ferrari design on it if you want, like, one off or something like that. And we traded numbers, whatever, and got in contact. He ordered a couple boards.
Dope.
And went and delivered them for him, and we just became friends. Like, we went out for a ride.
Yeah.
And slowly, like, cultivated this relationship. And I, you know, just, you know, asked him about his past, like, you know, what does he do? How did he become successful? And I found out this dude's got an amazing story. He, you know, at a very young age, like 19 or something, went to prison, did something stupid.
Yeah.
He was involved with the wrong people, went to prison, got out, and he's like, I want to turn my life around. I want to get a legit job. And started doing door-to-door sales for a telephone company, trying to get people to switch their plans. And he just killed it at that. Went from that to starting a branch of the company with that company. It's a huge company. They're like, you're so good at it. Like, can you start the whole branch for it?
Wow. Yeah.
And he started making a lot of money there. And then he got in a motorcycle wreck.
Oh, no.
After he's making all this money, he had his hot motorcycle, crashed it, broke his neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was paralyzed for 9 months.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think he had some really good mentors to kind of pull his hand and show him how they had been successful. And he learned about, like, the secret. He learned about a lot of those things that helped him out. And yeah, it's led him to be able to deliver a lot of value and to get what he wants and to make money and be successful.
Yeah.
And do whatever it takes to get there.
Yeah.
And hanging out with him, I've learned so much. I've learned a lot in the short time I've known him. He's a great dude. We're both business oriented, super talented guy.
Yeah.
So I love hanging out and learning a few things from my senior when it comes to, I guess, business successes and also years in life.
Yeah. Man, you can't beat that. Totally. Sounds like a great person to hang out with. Yeah.
Totally. He's a great dude.
Second friend is Demi Bagby.
Demi Bagby.
Yeah. How did you meet her? Because she seems adrenaline oriented, junkie like kind of how you are.
Yeah.
How did you meet her? Why do you stick around?
So, all right. So this, I was also on the PB boardwalk.
Oh my gosh. You mean everybody there?
I'm out. I was taking the crew. We had a new bike. We were trying to get people on the bike to try it out. And we were like four people. We ride over there and I'm going this way. And she's going the opposite direction on the boardwalk. And I see in the distance, like, beautiful girl on an electric skateboard.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready to launch my electric skateboard brand, Miles, at the time. And I see her whiz past. And I'm like, you guys, I'll be back. And I just hit the brakes. do a U-turn. And I just catch up to her. I was like, oh, hey. Like,
I had
to come
on?
Say hi. Like, cool board. Just start chatting to her. And that's how we met. I told her we were making a skateboard. I'd love for her to try it out. And, we ended up getting her a board and making like a board together with her. And we both have very similar personalities, like complete send it. She's a total adrenaline junkie. So we've made really good friends since then. And she's an awesome, awesome girl. She really inspired me a lot when it comes to social media because she just doesn't give a fuck.
She goes for it,
She'll just go for it and post. And it's really amazing. So I'm blessed to be able to learn from her. Despite her being over 10 years younger than me,
no way. I've learned
a lot from her. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I would never have guessed. Rom, I could ask you questions all day. I really could. But we're coming to the close of the podcast. And I got one more final question for you before we give it a big old send off. And it's a tough one.
All right.
What would you say would be the best first step for someone who's looking to turn their passion into their career?
Best first step for someone learning to turn their passion into their career. Number one is figure out what your passion is.
Yeah.
That's absolutely number one. It's probably the hardest part of this equation.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what it is.
Yeah.
To me, I'm like, I know what I'm passionate about, but I don't know if that's the exact passion. I think it's always changing. So
yeah.
Figuring out, asking yourself like you know, if I had no responsibilities, I didn't have to make money, what would I spend my time doing?
Yeah.
What do I spend my time talking about? Ask your friends, like, yo, what am I always talking about?
Yeah.
And that's probably something you're super passionate about. And go figure out then, like, okay, how can I get better at it?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I deliver this to more people?
Yeah.
Because whatever it is you're passionate about is probably 99.99999% sure there's other people who would be passionate about or into it.
Yeah.
And you can definitely make a very good business out of it.
Yeah. 100%. Man, you just, I'm gonna ask my friends literally, what am I talking about all the time?
Hell yes.
That's great.
What is it for you? What's your passion?
Man, that's what I'm saying. I think I'm similar to you where I have so many interests that, so right now I think it's the podcast. I love making videos. And I'm really interested in like personal finance.
Okay.
But I wouldn't think I would want to make a career out of that. So yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
You know? I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll give it time.
You got some soul searching to do.
Yeah. I mean, we'll dig down. We'll dig down.
Hell yeah.
Rob, you have been absolutely fantastic. This has been great. Where can we find you on the internet?
Hit me up on Instagram at rob.rast, R-A-S-T, or check out our newest product, the Baby Maker. If you want to see how we launched that and raised $1 million in 11 hours, it's flx.bike/babymaker.
Baby Maker, baby.
Yeah, check it out, baby.
And that's everywhere.
Yes, sir.
Love it. Rob, thanks for being on the show. Bye.